right, all right. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of Truth and Reconciliation. It's the Pellwood Fantasy Football League podcast. He's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. It is great to have you with us. Peter, how are you, sir?
I am doing fantastic. I gotta tell you, it feels like it's been longer since we did a podcast in this time where we did the post-draft one till now.
That's right.
Than it was from last year until the first one of this season. There's been so much that's happened in the realm of fantasy football that we haven't got to talk about.
So much.
That it's added up, and now it feels like it's been such a long time.
That's right.
And, I've missed it.
I know.
It's been for good reason, but I've missed it.
I kind of feel like this episode should be dedicated to talking about how much better the auction draft is over the regular draft. I feel like that's where we are in the timeline. Man, yeah, we have been out. We can blame a lot of things. There are multiple factors that led to the prolonged and I would say inappropriate break. It feels good to be back. I'm looking forward to being back on a true rhythm in the regular schedule of things. We had a natural disaster in the form of Hurricane Harvey that derailed us down here in H-Town, and my wife and I both particularly have heavy involvement in the community, and so our roles allowed us the opportunity to serve our community through that, and that was rewarding as it was heartbreaking as it was demanding. And so getting back into the new normal post-Harvey has been kind of on our swing. You've got a new normal in the Pellwood household. How are things going on in the Pellwood Party of Six world?
Baby is 5 weeks old today. Moving right along, things are going well, and it is definitely a new normal. It seems like it changes every day. It's definitely keeping us on our toes, but we're making our way through it. It's going well.
Well, I'm sure. Has TLC reached out to you for a reality show just yet? Is that a thing?
No, not yet. I don't think we have quite enough crazy. In our personalities to qualify.
I guess not. I guess y'all still buy your clothes, don't you?
Right. Yeah. I think it would be, I don't know, just too dull, too average American to be good reality TV.
You know what y'all need to do is y'all need to flip houses and keep having kids.
Yeah. That's definitely an option. Or one way we could go with things, but I think, we've got enough. We've done enough.
And one of you needs to have an addiction of some kind,
right?
That's just out there.
Well, I mean, we're talking here. That's does that not qualify?
Oh,
that's the addiction.
Hey, that means I might be a guest on your crazy show. That sounds fun.
Oh, this would definitely get a feature. The us podcasting would definitely get a feature on the show.
Yep.
And then they would cut to Kristen with a talking head.
I would say it would be Kristen at a couch talking about what's wrong in her marriage and this being the main source of blame or scapegoat. Anyway, I'm glad that baby's doing well. I'm glad that your life seems to, at least from outside looking in, you guys have kind of made it look easy from parenting. Have there been any challenges with this addition to your family?
I mean, there's daily challenges with, with being a parent, and those don't really go away once you have four kids. You just add more opportunities for challenges, and by the grace of God, we make it through each day, and there's plenty of love to go around now that we've got six members of the family. So, excited to be back. I'm very glad that you and Allie are safe. Very thankful you're able to get involved in the community. Very also glad that you've been able to work through the technology issues that have shot us down the past couple of weeks of trying to podcast and ready to be back here, ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with that, Pete, where do we even start? I mean, as you mentioned, we have been coming back from what feels like a massive gap in time. We are a full 5 weeks into the 2017 season. There's been twists, turns, numerous trades. I think we've had more trades this season than we have in a few past seasons combined. And we have a surprising leader of the pack. And so where do we even start?
Let's all right, so a couple of ways we notice this. I think we just need to catch up the audience, catch up the listeners on where the lead is. So, you know, we got five games in. We can run through the standings, we run through the power rankings. Maybe we're trying to do both. So let's talk about power rankings, because that kind of takes in more things than just the win-loss record, but we can definitely mention the win-loss record, and so we can kind of let people know where we are. So, all right, first place.
Pete, let me just mention on power rankings, in a world, a fantasy league really, well, no, we'll go with world, in at least nation, in a nation that has been anything but consistent, the ups and downs, the political climate, the social climate, the NFL quality first couple of weeks, just the overall drudgery of many a thing. In addition to all of those things, I know that making matters worse was the lack of the Truth and Reconciliation podcast availability. I mean, you add that on top of a pile of steaming, you know, crap that's already... Right. You know, piling up for everybody in our league, and it's already a hard life. And then you take away the one glimmer of hope during their week, the Truth and Reconciliation podcast, and man, its outlook takes a downturn quickly. However, fortunately for our league, Pete, you've been consistent, if not dedicated, to providing not only up-to-date power rankings, but the comment wit to boot. And I got to say, they are sharper and more on point than they have ever been. I have found myself jabbed and jibed and shade thrown and commentary. It has never been more, I'm going to go with piercing. It has never been more piercingly accurate and commentative, but also degrading. And I praise you for that. And I appreciate that in our lack of podcasting that at least those elements have been out there for us. So thanks for doing that, Kamish.
Well, they've never been produced on less sleep, so that probably has something to do with it.
But you know your secret sauce.
The filter is down a little bit. I'm just going to say what comes to mind. You know, full honesty.
Sure. Does being one of the sole 4-1 teams have anything to do with it as well? Is there a
could be?
Is
there could be a little bit of extra, a little ivory tower?
That's right. Maybe a little extra, you know, quipping your step a little bit there.
Oh,
a little,
I definitely have a little extra
tilt in your hat. Sure,
I do definitely have an extra pep in my fantasy football step this season, which we'll get into shortly. Why that may be, but. Yes, indeed. And so I'm glad you've enjoyed them. There have definitely been times where I'm, you know, manly logging the stats for these and spitting out the numbers, to be able to sort the power rankings for that week where I'm like, yeah, is this really worth it? But, I do like tracking it, and I get, as much, if not more enjoyment out of it as, anyone who sees them. So, without further ado, let's get into them. Our first number one spot on the power rankings in week five, which we all know is critical to long-term success, that week five you know, milestone. But we do have our Wookiee of the year, Chewy, new to the league, came in, has a 4-1 record, and is just crushing. Yeah, the comment this week was he has an average margin of victory of 33, which is a fun little stat that I calculated, and sure it's better than anyone else, but he is right up there in total points scored. I don't think he has the top spot, but I think he's in second. And you know, doesn't have a lot of points against him, which obviously helps. But he is at 4-1 of his own merit in the top spot in the power rankings, and was there last week and has been a very consistent, steady performer in the top five all season long.
Yeah, he's actually third in points four after week five. And the ironic thing is our points leader, Andy, is ahead by about 40 points despite his unfortunate record of 2-3.
Yes, that is true. Yeah, so that is where, you know, Chewy has had some schedule favorability. Where he hasn't had quite the gauntlet that Andy or Brent has, where they both have nearly 200 points more than Chewy against them, which is kind of crazy over a five-game stretch where you know, the average score is 40 points lower for Chewy than, you know, like Brent and Andy. But Chewy has a solid team, a strong team, and he deserves to be in the number one
spot. That's right. Yep, he's doing great. And I commend him for entering into a tough league with a tough draft and tough climate, and definitely, you know, puts shoe leather on you real quickly. I don't know what that expression means, but you understand.
Yeah.
One thing came to mind about it, though, in terms of the understanding of the climate, and I know that Chewy is listening out there. Chewy, you know, we brought you into this league. We were excited about it. We were ecstatic by your interview process. But really, you got to know your place, man. There's a totem pole here. I feel like you're biting the hand that feeds you. Don't bite the hand that feeds you, Chris. Take your licks. Pay your dues.
I mean, he's the first person to join the lead who was already a loyal listener of the podcast beforehand.
That's right.
So he knew what he was walking into. I'm sure he had profiles developed on every
file
forwarders, dossiers of background information.
Yeah.
He knew all of our biases and prejudices.
That's right.
And he took advantage of it, you know.
That's right. I think this is a long con. Been playing the field for a long time, and I think he situated himself in a master strategy. I think we are witnessing real life representation of the classic Bond villain who's been working up for years to see his plan executed.
I'd like to see the montage of Chewie preparing to join the lead, where he's in his basement,
so many spreadsheets.
Yeah, reading spreadsheets while he's got separate earbuds in each ear with podcasts rolling and just absorbing all the information that to be able to come to the lead and know exactly how to crush the competition.
Yeah, that's right.
It's obviously struck fear in the heart of his opponents.
It's working.
All right, moving on to number two, yours truly sitting there. I am sixth in points scored, so nothing to write home about there. I have actually more points against me than I have scored. I sit with a 4-1 record. That comes with two victories by less than 1 point and another victory by less than 5 points. So total luck to be at 4-1. I could very, very easily be 1-4 or 2-3.
Sure.
But here I sit with really some thrilling victories, and which have been just so fun to enjoy.
I don't know if thrilling would be the overall consensus word. I don't know. I'm going to point to Derek as the latest authority on on how those victories feel, and he certainly represented the diversity of the word most recently of what. I think our league consensus might be describing your so-called victory, but you can't deny the cold hard facts of your win-loss column, and a W is a W, and you have more than most in our league. So,
I enjoy my record, where at the same time I know that in previous seasons on the podcast, I have looked at teams with a profile of mine and been like, yeah, that's not going to last. You're not going to keep that up. You can't keep winning by less than 5 points and expect to win. So yeah, I'm totally aware that it's crumbling down very quickly, but it's been fun so far.
You know what I find very interesting about points for, points against, is that you mentioned your difference being pretty marginal and having less points for than against. Ironically, the spread, we talk about squish factor a lot, the spread of points for, points against, I think is remarkably tight considering the current power rankings. And that Chewy, of course, he's sitting at a plus of 132 points in his spread between points for and points against, whereas Andy, has had the most points for in the league at 722. He has a 3-point margin between his points for and points against, which tells us that this is matchup issues. You know, he played the wrong people on the wrong weeks. And you go down the line and you look at So one of our bottom sides being Michael Fitzsimmons, 558 points for. He's had 664 against, 106 point difference against him. Other than those two outliers, everybody else is fairly tight. I would say that Brent is the secondary outlier at 80 point difference. He's had 741 points against him, 661 for. Derek is a 17 point positive spread. I'm a negative 3 point positive spread. We have Andy, as I said, the 3 point positive. We've got Jared, who's a 20 point positive. You've got yourself, who's a 10-point negative spread. There's some tight matchups going on this season thus far. What is your take on that?
I think overall it's been just a lower scoring fantasy season so far, a lower scoring NFL season so far. You know, there's just less points per game. But we've had some really big games by defenses is where a lot of fantasy points have come from. So we haven't had any of those like massive peak weeks where there's been, you know, one player scoring 50 or, you know, a handful of players scoring over 40 points. And so I think it's just scoring overall is down, which, you know, compresses the margin of victory.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been tight and there's definitely been some,
as you said, thrilling matchups.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Thrilling.
Sure.
I love these tight matchups as long as I keep winning them.
Sure. Well, I was the victim of one of those thrilling matchups a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And almost the victim again last week.
Oh, it wasn't. I don't oversell. It wasn't that close.
It wasn't that close, but it was. The conditions were correct for it to have been closer.
Yeah, the stars were aligning.
That's right.
All right, so you mentioned Andy. He is in the number three spot in the power rankings. Like you said, most points in the league, second most points against. His team is, this is the best team Andy has ever had. It's fun to see him competing so strongly with such a good team. He's riding the Jaguars, both their running back and their defense, to massive points, which is
shocking.
Yeah, you wouldn't really think of the Jaguars as being a fantasy gold mine, but that's how he's getting there. And so I expect that he, you know, he's 2-3. The power rankings reflect some of that, but that not. Not very. It doesn't weight that very much. It really focused more on his points scored,
sure,
and how he's done week to week compared to the rest of the league. So that's why he's in the number three spot, even though he has a losing record and is would be in the sixth playoff seed position if the season ended today. So that's Andy in number three. Brock sits at number four. Brock is very bitter about his 3-2 record because he could very easily be 5-0 after having some very late comeback defeats that he's been the victim of. He sits at fifth in points scored. He's got about an 80-point gap in his spread between points scored and points against, which really, considering how close his losses have been, just shows you how wide his margin of victory has been in his victories. So that's Brock at number four. You got anything to anyone to mention about Brock's team?
Brock's tilt, I'll say, has been notable.
Oh yes,
his GroupMe game and his heart is certainly on his sleeve. We'll just leave it at that. Not a lot of poker face on Brock currently. You know how he feels in any given moment.
Yeah. Primarily about me.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well,
Jared sits at number five. He is also at 2-3. He started the season off 2-0. If we had been able to do podcasts, you know, after like week two, we probably would have had Jared on, and then he could blame us for the 3-game losing streak.
Oh yeah, he probably missed out on that.
Yeah, we probably he would have been, you know, sitting high in the power rankings. Probably would have been like, hey, you know, did we have Jared on?
Yeah.
He's number one in the power rankings after week one. Number two in the power rankings after week two. Number one, the power rankings after week three, you know, but then he started slipping, and now he finds himself at number five. He still has the second most points scored in the lead, so things should turn around for him. It's just been a bad run, especially with the matchups, I think, in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Brent is in a similar boat. He's in number six in the power rankings. Very similar boat to Jared, where Brent has the most points against. He started the season off 2-0. And has since lost 3 in a row. That's why he finds himself at number six. I think there's been some injuries here. and really just a brutal run of matchups when he has 740 points against him, which is more than anyone has points scored. So if Brent's points against him were a team, they would lead the lead in scoring.
That's right.
So that's a tough.
Yeah, Brent truly does have a strong team, and he's gotten a few injuries here and there that have disrupted it. So his team moving forward from here on out is not the same as the one that's been putting up those high scores. But right now he should be further ahead as he is compared to where he is because of the matchup issues.
Yeah, here are the points against him so far. 158, and he actually won that one. And then 123, he won that one. And then his losses were points against him, so 168, 158, and 134. Yeah. So it's a tough bar to get over if that's the standard you have to beat each week.
That's right.
Seventh place in the power rankings is Chris Windsor. He has a 3-2 record. He would actually sit in the number 5 playoff spot, I believe. With his 3-2 record, so he's off to a good start for the season. Power rankings don't love him as much as the standings do, where it puts him in 7th instead of 5th. But he had a massive win last week, and things are looking up for his team. Although I shouldn't say anything positive about his team because I think he's forbidden me to do that along with everyone else. But Chris, especially sensitive to my talking on the podcast about his team.
Hmm. Well, then I'll do it. I think that he has a very envious team, and when all the parts work, he's a big winner.
There you go. Eighth place in the power rankings is Ben. He, obviously, we covered this. He did the auto draft. Not entirely his fault. So partially his fault, not entirely his fault. That's the team he ended up with. Unfortunately for him, one of the players the auto draft picked for him was Odell Beckham, who is now undergone season-ending surgery.
Yeah.
Not looking too hot for Ben when you lose such a stud like that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been making some flagrant trade offers today and yesterday. been privy to a few of them, but it makes me sad, really, if anything, because he's my friend, and I want him to do well and be excited about his team. And he had a bummer start and a tough start, even though he's really sharp and prepares well. And I kind of feel for him.
I think we need to talk about flagrant trade offers because I've had three or four lead members kind of share with me an example of a trade offer that they've received where they're like, can you believe this? Like, can you believe this trade offer? I'm offended. I'm appalled. This is awful.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't get it. I've been more active trading than anyone to this point, and I haven't had any of those experiences with a flagrant trade offer. So I don't understand how this is happening when everyone has everyone's phone number. Why are we having trade gouging kind of conversations? We're gonna have trade reconciling conversations.
Sure.
What's going on, Seth? What's going on out there in the muck and the mire as I sit in my ivory tower?
Well, I can only speak about my current experiences, and with the exception of what Ben and I discussed earlier today, which I told him he sent me a trade offer last night that offended me a little bit because it wasn't an unjust offer, but it was an offer that said that he thought I did not know the worth of the player that he was trying to get from me. And I was a little offended by that, going, hey, you think I don't know what's happened in and around this guy and what's coming, and you're offering me that because you're trying to beat me to the news wire is what you're trying to do. You don't want me to know news wire. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I've had three or four offers come in for Kamara over the past 24 hours.
Sure. Because, I almost made one to you, and I was like, no.
Because so many people are trying to beat the news wire and trying to sneak an offer in on a low ball. Right. And I go, guys, come on. I run a podcast. Like I've got news articles on live RSS feeds coming my way. Like I'm not in the dark over here. Like I'm not necessarily offended or insulted, but like The attempt, I think I would be offended if it was meant in malice, but I sense the tongue in cheek, you know, I sense the kind of the elbow nudge of, oh, let's just send this your way. And, okay.
Do you all know right. what I know?
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly what I've been dealing with. So yeah. That's the climate that I've been dealing with. Every other trade negotiation has been very helpful. The big trade that I did with Chewy yesterday, that was a great conversation, because what we really did come to the table with, first of all, my trade philosophy is this: I will discuss any trade you want to discuss. Like, there is no, I am not attached to any player. I care about my team getting better, and whatever options I have, I like options. If you give me options, that's what makes teams better, and then I'm open to discussing them. If they are not worth discussing, then I'll shut it down or say, yeah, no, he's off the table, or yeah, no, that's never going to fly unless you give something like this my way. This is the only thing that would be more valuable to me than losing that player. But in my discussion with Chris, it's always about, when I trade with somebody, does this make both of our teams better? That's what a trade should be. Like,
right.
Does this help you? Does this help me? Can we make a valid argument, not an undercutting argument or a sneaky argument? Can we make a valid argument that this trade arrangement makes our teams better? So with Chris, it was all about that. We actually had two options. One involved a one-fer, and the other was a twofer for a little bit bigger of a player. I was going after Todd Gurley. When he brought it up, he approached me initially asking about Smith, looking for that top QB. And I said, okay, and we talked about doing a one-fer, which would have been just a real quick, simple exchange, which I was open to it. I was fine with, because I thought Carlos Hyde for Smith was probably not a bad trade.
Uh-huh.
And yep. So with that, I look at that and go, I love Smith, and I love him as a backup quarterback because he's the number one quarterback, and nobody saw that coming. But I'm not benefiting from his points because I have a more consistent, or at least historically consistent, quarterback in the hole. And so I'm okay with dropping a QB, but what is that gaming? Well, I've got a running back issue with Crowell not doing his thing. So I thought that's a decent trade. But wouldn't it be great if I had Todd Gurley instead? Yes. So I thought, okay, well, how badly does he want Smith? Because if I backfill Todd Gurley with somebody like CJ Anderson, who I had recently acquired from you, a very good RB, top of the RB2, if not bottom of the RB1, depending on your RB structure, player who would backfill. He's not a Todd Gurley by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
But do the Smith CJ Anderson points make up for your lack of Gurley and your additional QB points? And I get a strong running back out of it. That's an exchange that we can both make valid arguments. Say what you want to say about name of the player, and in the exchange, the perceived value versus actual value, I think, is what that comes down to. And I'm gonna come back to that little point in just a second. But ultimately, we went for the dollar for dollar, or the player for player exchange. I added Ben Roethlisberger in there because I wanted a backfill for my bye week, and I said, "Hey, throw Ben in there. I'll do this deal right now."
Nice.
And we did, and that was it. So that was why. What has Ben doing in there? It was just giving me the option. He was going to have to drop somebody from his lineup anyway, and so gives me the option of a backup quarterback that I don't have to go to the waiver for come week 8. So
yeah.
But with that, to answer your question, perceived value versus actual value. So much of what makes a trade, it's based on perceived value. What do I believe the value of this player to be versus what do you believe the value of that player to be? And what happens is you get these balk trade offers where, you know, the potentially offensive considerations are being thrown out there. And what's happening is I'm hoping or taking a chance that your perceived value of that player is different than mine, and I want you to agree to my perceived value over yours. That's what the exchange is really about. Whereas I try to prefer to say, let's come to the agreement on actual value and then go tit for tat. Let's come to the agreement of actual value and say, yes, we stack hands on what this player's worth, what that player's worth, and how does the exchange or a combination therein make each of our teams better? I find that to be a healthier trade conversation. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with many of the points that you had. I think trade conversations, a lot of times, here are some of the errors that I think I see people making. One is what you already mentioned, which is assuming that the other owner is dumb about his own players, right? And thinking, oh, you don't know, or you know, assuming like, hey, maybe I can steal this guy before the, you know, the other owner realizes that now he's the starting running back, or now he's, you know, stepped into this, you know, larger role on his team, and what he's done to this point in the season isn't as good as what he's going to do the rest of the season just because of a like depth chart change on his team.
Right.
So that's one mistake, is assuming the other person you're talking to is an idiot. And then the second one is going into the trade with a trying to get rid of a landmine from your own team, where your goal of making the trade is, this, I don't like this guy on my team. I don't trust him on my team. Can I shove him on someone else and get something good in return?
That's right.
Which, again, basically goes back to, you're assuming that the owner is an idiot. Now, you may have some sort of hunch and some sort of idea about a player where you think that you know, he's going to take a step back, but you know, it's not certain, and that's just going off your gut. You could just as easily be wrong, right or wrong. You know, it's just gut feel. There's no, you know, evidence to support it, really. You know, so I think those are some of the biggest, and really just the last one is going into a trade thinking I'm going to win this trade, and I'm only going to accept a deal where I know I'm winning this trade, because you just can't do it. You'll never get a deal done, because that stuff, it all smells so pungent and bad when you're in those kinds of trade conversations. Which is like, I'm just like, I don't even want to continue the conversation, because I can tell you're trying to screw me, or you think I don't know what I'm doing, and you know, I'll go look somewhere else when or I don't feel so disrespected.
Sure, you know, and I think there's two more things as you're describing that came to mind. One of them is the quantity for quality. Assumption. I hate that. I hate getting a trade. Oh, you're going to send me three guys from your bench for my starter.
Right.
I can only play one of them, but thanks. That doesn't work. You're not increasing overall team value. You make the argument, well, you need depth. That is a very common mistake, because depth does not necessarily mean quantity. So you cannot come out swinging thinking that quantity is going to inherently, because you're willing to trade three for one, that brings quality to the mix.
Yep, absolutely. And so, just with all this trade conversation, let the record show, 9 trades have happened so far this season, and we're not
four
even
of
the
them
week
in the past 24 hours.
Yeah, 4 of them this week, and only one trade has been vetoed all season long, which was a fat finger error. And other than that,
idiot,
all trades have gone through, even with the opposition to some of them from whatever party. There's the only reason for a veto in my mind is an error that was made, an honest error made, and collusion. And there's been no hint of to this point. It's not really the point of the season where anyone's colluding anyway, that everyone still has a shot at it. So
let's taking a step onto the other side here, I will say, part of the culture of our league and the competitive spirit is to hate on trades.
Yes.
Not because trades aren't good, but that's just, I mean, part of the group me fun is being like, veto, because we want to slam anything that we perceive as giving other league managers advantage.
It's just jealousy.
It
really
is. It's envy at its core.
Everyone wants to be in a trade.
That's right.
And whenever a trade happens that you're not in, you're like, oh, I wasn't in that one. Oh.
That's right.
that trade's stupid. It shouldn't happen because I'm not in it.
Yeah, exactly. It brings up envy, maybe a little insecurity. Like, wait, why didn't I think to make a trade offer like that?
Why didn't I go for that player?
Am I not as good? And so you got to come up with an excuse. Oh, that's a stupid trade. I would never do that. That's veto that. That's dumb. Who does that? Who does that, Ben? So it's just like, you know, like you just Yeah, but it's part of the culture, and that's just fine. You're going to take a ribbing. I was talking to Chris yesterday about our potential trade that we were working on. I said, hey, Chris, you should know, because you are the number one leader in the league right now, that me doing business with you puts a target on my head, because it appears to be kind of panning to the league leader. Also, anybody who does, like, you're the enemy. Right now it's 1 versus 11. Like, there is that perception of you don't help the number one guy. And, you know, I'm fine with it, because, I'm all about making both teams better in a trade. But just be aware that there may be some shade thrown come trade approval that comes your way, because you're seemingly helping Goliath get a bigger sword.
Yeah, but you could also be, taking a small hack at knocking Goliath down. Who knows?
That's right.
I mean, you gave him Alex Smith as a number one overall quarterback. How many times do you have the chance to do that?
That's right.
I'm not saying Alex Smith is a landmine, but if you're talking about historical performance and where that's going to trend, sure. I don't think I'm not going to bet on Alex Smith finishing as the number one overall quarterback.
I don't know if he does, and I'm not. I wasn't counting on any way, but and I wasn't trying to, you know, submarine Chris any means, yeah. But. I think that, you know, and he'll speak for himself when we have him on the air before too long in the coming week. But the thing that I was speaking with him about yesterday just kind of reiterated the sense that, okay, this league has some teeth to it, and you got to be ready for it.
Yep.
And the trade talks, even the waiver is no exception.
All right, back to the standing power rankings. Slight detour there. You are next in ninth place. That's where you were last week as well. But you know, you've been coming on stronger as of late. That hasn't reflected in moving up in the power rankings yet. But sure. You know, I think you're starting to build some good things.
Yeah.
See some players develop, and I'm honestly. Scared.
Stop it! I know exactly what you're doing.
Looking at our matchup this week,
I'm just gonna edit all this out.
Okay, that's fine. But just between you and me, looking at our matchup this week, I see CJ Anderson against the Giants.
I do like that matchup a lot.
Like, the Giants just are so terrible.
They're so bad right now. Like, CJ Jacksonville,
and all Denver wants to do is run the ball.
That's right.
The Giants are so terrible. I just see CJ Anderson just completely whipping me with my own, you know, giving points to the enemy there. So
thanks for guaranteeing me a torn ACL in the first 4 minutes. I appreciate that.
A couple weeks ago, I was thinking, all right, that's going to be a win on the schedule, but not so anymore. So things are definitely.
So do you regret giving me CJ Anderson? Is that what you're hinting at?
No, I really like LeSean McCoy, but
you do. You've tried to pick him up several years running.
I do have some concerns about McCoy right now. Hopefully, out of his bye week this week, those are remedied and starts to look more like himself. So we will see what happens. But all right, moving on. Derek is 10th on the power rankings. After a terrible. Terrible loss in five, just crushing defeat. He sits at 2-3. Points scored, he is on the lower end of the lead. I think he's third from the bottom, but he's had some tight games as well. So, but still 2-3. You know, you're only one game out of the of the playoff. So
that's right.
Even after a tough start, anyone's still in it.
That's right. Yep. And he had a big board this past week, so he looks healthy.
Right, yeah, that was part of the unfortunate things. He put up his highest score of the season and lost by 0.8 points. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in case he needed the reminder. Thanks, Pete. I'm sure that. Yeah.
I can't help it that I enjoyed it so much.
Yeah. Can't you? Can't you?
Scott is in 11th place. I don't think we've talked about it since it happened, but Scott had the best keeper in the world with David Johnson at $0, and then now David Johnson is out for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he's coming back at some point before the season's over. I think it was a wrist surgery, but not sure what the timetable is there. But so, you know, that really harpooned Scott's team. He said some other players he auto drafted as well. So going from best keeper in the world to auto draft, that tanked it a little bit, and then the keeper gets hurt for most of the year. And that's just a really tough hill to climb. But still, he has gutted out two victories, even though he has the fewest points in the league. So he's at 2-3 as well, one spot out of the competition. And then finally, Michael sits at the bottom spot in the power rankings after dropping a couple of games in a row here, which has just dragged him down. I still think he has a fine team, and we'll have a chance to make a comeback here. It's still wide open field, but obviously he has got the biggest hill to climb at the only team that sits at 1-4.
You know the Giants are bad when Michael Fitzsimmons finally concludes not to draft any Giants on his team.
True. It's true. Yeah, I mean, and all four of his losses, he has less than 120 points, but then his one victory has 168 points. So I think if you just find that middle ground in there and start to put up some scores in the 130s, 140s, he'll start seeing more victories come as well.
Boom. All right, so that does it for the power rankings. Now, Pete, I'd like to pull off to the side of the road here. Typically, the podcast has served more so as my monologuing podium. If I have an axe to grind or a thought that I just want to put out there, this is, obviously I have creative control, and so maybe I monopolize that a little bit. What I'd like to do right now, though, is just hand over the reins to you, sir. You've been taking a little bit of flack, and there's been some, I'm going to call it propaganda. There's been some hateful words, some assumptions being made. There are some diehard truthers out there that believe the things that they are saying about you and hold deeply to their convictions at that deep level. I'd like to give the commissioner the rant box. Are you ready to hop on the rant soapbox, Pete?
I am. This has been building up for the last 4 weeks, really. The commissioner's seat is hot right now, and it's throwing me back. Let me take you back to kindergarten.
Take me back to kindergarten, please.
Let me tell you a little bit about my childhood.
Please.
Just in case you weren't aware, the absolute worst name to have in kindergarten is Peter. Okay? Just think about the possibilities. Yeah, Peter Piper. Peter Pumpkin Eater.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Peter Rabbit.
Mm.
It's another name for penis.
Yes, sure.
You go to Sunday school. Yeah. And you hear about Peter denying Jesus.
That's right.
And Jesus yelling, "Get behind me, Satan," at Peter.
Yeah.
So
Pete Rose.
And then of course there's Peter Pan. And now I have been thrown back to kindergarten, thrown back to all that trauma, all the abuse over my name, with this new moniker of Peter Panderer that has been thrown at me. And photoshopped and enhanced by you, I'll say
allegedly,
really fantastic Photoshop job. But Peter Panderer is my I don't know what's the my alter ego. I guess it would be Peter Panderer. And it started. It's been a long time coming. So I have a history of jinxing things. It's just I'm not sure. I know my wife noticed it several years ago watching baseball games together. I would say something. I would make a comment about how a certain player is doing or how this pitcher is doing, and immediately that would turn around. It would say, "Oh, this hitter's been doing great," and then he strike out, or "Oh, this pitcher's been doing great," and then he gave up a home run. Or talking about the other team, say something bad about the other team, and they instantly start playing better. I just jinx things. It's just like it's this curse. And then I got a Twitter profile and I would start tweeting things, and now there's like this future GM jinx that is a thing that some of my most loyal followers are aware of, is that I just jinx things. I don't mean to do it, I just do it. I like to talk about things that are like anomalies and like, "Oh, hey, that's kind of strange." And then wouldn't you know it, that strange thing stops happening and it regresses back to the mean of what you would expect to happen. And I get blamed for it as if I had control over sure. that. Simply because I pointed out, like, hey, look at this unusual thing that's happening. And then all of a sudden it stops being unusual. Because that's what you'd expect it to be. It's supposed to become more usual. Mm. And I get blamed for it. I take all the flack for it. And now it's happened many, many times in my friendship with Brock, especially over the last couple of years. We have played fantasy baseball on FanDuel and DraftKings every day for the last three baseball seasons. And there have been times where I've talked about being down and out and come back to win. And so Brock is sick of it, is one way of putting it. And then we come to week two of this fantasy football season, and I am playing against none other than Brock. I am getting crushed early, and it's those 12 o'clock games on Sunday give you a pretty good idea of how the game's going to go, because that's when the bulk of the action happens, and Brock is just annihilating me. I've got nothing going from anyone on my team. I've only got two players left, CJ Anderson and Davante Adams, and they play in the late games. It's like they can't mm-hmm. help me. Well, CJ Anderson goes nuts yep. against the Cowboys. You may remember.
I do recall.
Couldn't stop him.
I recall. Just
put up a huge score.
Yes.
I think it was in the 30 points or something like that. It was massive.
Mm-hmm.
32 points. And this was after I had gotten like 13 points from Le'Veon, who, you know, he's my rock. I need Le'Veon to do well. I got 1 point from Jimmy Graham. I got 16 points from Russell Wilson at home against the 49ers. And I'm just like, oh, come on. Where are the points? Where are the points? Well, CJ Anderson scores 32. Just ridiculous. But I'm still down by a lot, and I have one player left to his three. I'm still losing. I've got Davante Adams. He's got Martellus Bennett, Theo Riddick, and Matt Prater. And we're pretty much neck and neck, but it's 1-3, so it's like, you know, what are the odds? Well, Adams in that Sunday night game, then he gets kind of crazy. Jordy Nelson gets hurt. Adams did so many balls thrown at him. He puts up 24 points. And Martellus Bennett doesn't do a whole lot for Brock. But still, Brock is only down by 17 points with two players left going into Monday night. He just needs them to have below average games. And he's out in the bag. They're both on Detroit. Detroit gets to a big lead early on the Giants. Is the Giants stink? Giants
yep.
terrible?
Yep.
And his ticker ends up nailing like a 50-yard field goal at halftime. And I'm like, well, that's it. I'm done. Because Brock's down by like 3 points with a whole half to go, two players left. There's no way I win.
Hmm.
And then Theo Riddick stops getting touches.
That's right.
Yeah. The Lions, I think, maybe scored a touchdown in the second half. Yeah. Didn't give Prater any field goal chances.
Yep.
He didn't make it.
Yeah.
He didn't make it there. Nope. The Lions had the ball on the final drive.
On the, like, final drive. Where were we in the red zone, Pete?
It wasn't even the red zone. But on the final drive, Amir Abdullah gets hurt. Yeah. And he's the only thing between Theo Riddick and touching the ball. And so Theo Riddick is on the field for the entire final drive for the Lions. He has to touch the ball. He has to get,
think?
One catch.
Theo Riddick. A catch.
10 yard.
A catch.
Something.
Two drives.
The Giants have been putting up no fight whatsoever. And Theo Riddick, he gets knocked backwards a couple times. He gains a few yards, but not enough. But they're in field goal range,
right? That's right. Sure.
Field goal range. Lots of touching down. Why not take the field
Why
goal
not?
With the points? Right? Well, I mentioned that. They're going to take the field goal. Games are over.
That's
or
right.
Theo Riddick's going to pick up the first down, and
yeah.
I lose that way.
One of two things are going to happen, right?
I'm
going
to lose.
Yeah.
Well, in that moment, I had kind of put my real football brain to the side, and it was the only thing with my fantasy football brain, which said they should score as many points as they can. Like, that's the goal of the game. Score as many points as they can, so they don't take the field goal. I lose. They didn't take the field goal on fourth down. Theo Riddick didn't put up the first down. They were on fourth down. They did not kick the field goal as I thought they would have.
Right.
Because they shouldn't have, because things could go wrong. And then that would give the Giants a chance to come back from a 14-point deficit. When, if they just go for a fourth down and lose, there's really no way the Giants could come back from a 14-point deficit. So, right. They didn't kick the field goal. Brock ended 0.9 points short of beating me after I had scored the bulk of my points with my final two players, mm-hmm. and after his final three players performed well below expectations,
mm-hmm.
and it was special. You know, it was a special moment. We all shared it together. It was special, and Brock was.
There you go, living. Using adjectives that I don't think the entire league would be in consensus on. But that aside. This is a league of data heads. These men, we are building spreadsheets. We are analyzing data. We are computing high level statistics in order to come to the best possible conclusion in order to make the best decision, to field the best team, to secure the victory. At the end of the day, is it random? Sure. At the end of the day, is performance dependent on more variables than we have the ability to comprehend, let alone compute and predict. Yeah, sure. However, these guys who, with the exception of maybe Brock, don't necessarily jump to radical conclusion without the appropriate data in play. Pete, there seems to be a correlation, scientifically speaking, statistically speaking, between your observations or comments and outcome. Would you argue against that correlation at this juncture? I'm not saying correlation equals causation here. I'm asking the question, are they right to put some dots together?
Okay, so the correlation is there, right? It's, you can't deny the correlation is there. But why is everyone so mad at me?
Okay, like, okay, try this.
I've been told to shut up and stop talking. So many times.
Okay. All right. We're getting down to the real feelings here. Okay.
I don't care that they're mad at me. I just don't understand.
Okay. Well, here, venture with me down the rabbit hole, man. Are you familiar with the concepts?
Just because I say something, it's going to change. Like, it's the butterfly that's going to cause
a
hurricane.
Right. Okay. Here.
Like, the me texting in a group chat that's a close between the 11. I'm not even tweeting. You know, it's not like, oh, someone's going to read it somewhere and it's going to become something. It's a closed group chat. No one's sharing it outside. There's no wind for the butterfly's wings to flap to cause a hurricane. Like, how is me saying anything? Like, even today, like, I started talking about our matchup and you're like, just stop. Just stop
that's
talking.
Right. Well,
like,
that was me bandwagoning. Don't worry.
Yeah, I know. I'm fine with that, Jonathan, because it's blown to ridiculous proportions. So why
that's
not
right.
keep going at this?
That's
point, right.
Well, here, venture with me down this rabbit hole. You're familiar with quantum mechanics, a few concepts of theoretical physics, sure. as well as the psychology and the metaphysical in combination with that. You're familiar with is it Schrodinger's cat, the thought experiment? You're familiar with the Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Yep.
The idea that your observations have unintended impact on the results of whatever it is you are observing, correct? What correlation I see here is that you are making observations. There are distinct correlations, which is happening enough, as you referenced, all the way back into kindergarten. So either...
The name calling was really back to kindergarten. The gene scene and stuff like the last 10 years.
Okay. All right. So in the wizard world, Harry Potter becomes a wizard around age 11 after going through some kind of funky wizard puberty of magic. So your correlation and butterfly effect of pandering is coming into play here as a young adult, and you're starting to see its impact. And some might accuse you as of late of realizing your mutant abilities and then harnessing them for evil.
See that? Okay, so I think that's the part I don't understand.
Right?
It's because I'm not trying to do this. It's not like, oh, you know what? I'm losing. I should start saying some stuff. Like, all right, it's time. Let's flip the switch on because now I need to start talking, and then I'll turn things around. Like I'm not trying to pander to the fantasy gods. That's what I'm being accused of, and I've been told that I'm doing. But that's not what I'm doing. Like I don't think my words have any impact. I hardly think talking to you has any impact on your life right now. But definitely what I text about fantasy football in our group chat isn't going to have any impact. So I am really, I'm just trying to be a good commissioner. I want to stimulate conversation in the group. I want people to be engaged. So I'm like, hey, let's talk about stuff, right? Let's like, oh, hey, this interesting thing's happening. Let's point it out. And then it bites me hard because I apparently have some power to reverse the course of whatever's happening. Like the ship is going down the channel. I say something and it hits a rock, you know, like just because I like you would not want me on the Titanic or the Mayflower or whatever.
No,
I'd be like, this is our clear sailing day.
Wouldn't it be crazy if this unsinkable ship just sunk? It would be crazy. Peter, keep your mouth shut. I'm sorry.
But I mean, and then, all right. So, and now in the most recent example, I mean, I didn't do anything, right? I mean, against Derek, I didn't say anything.
And that quote made it into your most recent Photoshop of Peter Pander.
Yeah. I wasn't even watching the Cowboys game, and that was the last game of the day was the Cowboys game, and he had Dak and he had Dez and he had the Aaron Jones for the Packers, quote unquote Aaron Jones, like that's a real person, and they all just went crazy in that game, and I was projected to win by like 50 points.
That's right.
Until that game started.
Sure.
Well, Dak got like 3 touchdowns really quick. One of them to Dez. All I said was Dak can cool it, right? Like that's all I said. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Dak didn't cool it. No. He kept scoring.
Yeah.
And this Aaron Jones person who I hadn't even considered was like a possibility to impact the game. He kept scoring. I didn't say anything. I didn't. I didn't say anything. I just shut my mouth. All I had was Devontae Adams. Once again, Devontae Adams, the hero. He will go down in Raymond Hessel's Breakfast infamy as a hero.
Oh, sure.
Because he's not on Raymond Hessel's Breakfast anymore, so he is not going to be able to live long enough to be a villain. I've killed him off as a hero.
That's right? Probably why. Traded away.
Hero,
Yep. Keep someone hot.
Cowboys score on a Dak Prescott rushing touchdown.
Who saw that coming?
1 minute left. 1 minute left. I'm down by 7 points. All I have left is Devontae Adams. And here comes Green Bay once again. Jordy Nelson gets hurt again. Devontae Adams catches a touchdown pass again. I didn't say anything.
With 11 seconds to go, mind you.
I didn't say, oh man, minute left. No way the Packers score here. No way they throw it to Devontae Adams for a touchdown here. I didn't say that. I thought it, but I didn't say it.
I think if Derek were here, he and Brock certainly would say, well, thinking it was bad enough.
Well, but you know what else? I thought that, but then as I thought it, I contradicted myself and was like, that's exactly what's going to happen. And so I didn't say
anything. See, that's you recognizing that it's true, though. See, you just...
I'm running hot on the luck, you know? You keep throwing crap when you're running hot. You just keep throwing it. And that was just the feeling. It's like, yep, I'm going to roll another 8.
I think if you've confirmed anything, it's that you're in denial. I think that's tonight what we have concluded. That you're still in denial. And I think that's probably the root of why everybody's mad. You're pretending like it doesn't work, but it does, and you've validated it over and over. You just proved it to yourself, and then talked yourself back out of it again. Peter Pander lives.
Well, now, all right, I have effectively killed Peter Pander here on this podcast by talking about it.
You're pandering yourself.
It will no longer happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Mark my words. I've killed it. I've taken my powers, poured them into this podcast for you.
Oh, man.
For you, the listener, for you, my lead mates, I this is my gift to you.
You've just given me the next speech bubble for Peter Pander. Mark my words. they marked them all right. Marked them.
Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully everyone just made slight terrible roster decisions because it's all in their head that I'm going to beat them no matter what.
There you go. That's power you can't buy.
Yep.
That's the power of fear.
Intimidation.
That's right. Well, I'm glad you've been listening to Diabolical Criminal Maniacs in your strategies against the psychological warfare of fantasy football.
Well, what else am I going to use it for?
That's right. So, Pete, good episode. Thanks for the walk down your memory lane. Sorry for your unfortunate naming. Definitely would recommend seeing somebody about some unresolved feelings toward your parents and their choice of name towards you. I enjoyed the ranking discussion. And the squish factor, although frustrating to many, is still anybody's race. There's not anybody who's been eliminated from the opportunity to at least make the playoffs, if not do very, very well in the latter half of the league. And it's still early. The past couple weeks have brought more injuries. They've been kind of condensed as the NFL has caught up, the past 2 weeks especially. So anything can happen on any given week. And when
it seems like trading fever has been contagious. People are going to keep trading. That's going to keep changing team dynamics. You know, the 1-4 could become much better than that.
And, that's right.
And so on and so on. So, keep those trades going. And, you know, we talked about this being the greatest fantasy football league in the world. And there are many reasons for that. But one reason is really the trade discussions. Even if people make terrible trade offers, and even if, people get offended or it's not productive or whatever, at least they happen. At least those conversations are happening. You know, playing other leagues and it just never happens. And it's dull and it's like you got nothing to look forward to but the waiver wire, Thursday night game, Sunday night game. But there's so much happening in our league all throughout the week, pretty much every day.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And that's what makes it the greatest fantasy football.
That's right. And I think as I was yesterday thinking about, because I kept on, today just felt like a Thursday.
Yeah.
Even doing the podcast tonight, it felt like Thursday to me. My workday felt like a Thursday to me. And I was thinking, man, it's waiver Christmas Eve, and right. Tomorrow is waiver Christmas. And I got super excited about the waiver. Yeah. And I realized the league banter, the there is a thread through, and that's what makes this so communal to me and why it's a worthy investment, why we bring quality to it through our discussions, through our podcast, through our website, through the things that make it worth its salt. The we could probably have multiple episodes on why the Pelwood League is the greatest fantasy football league in the world, but we'll refrain for the sake of humble or fake humility, I suppose. Feigned humility, but the reality is we have a communal thread that is carrying us every single day. This is something that brings us together. We have a great time with it. There's so much fun going on, and it's valuable in and out and consistent throughout the entire week. So Pete, thanks for commissioning a great league. Even when your feet are to the fire, you take it well. And fortunately, honestly, you probably aren't getting enough credit for the hate not influencing your decisions. So you are a just commissioner.
Like, it's really the wind beneath my wings. even if it's all directed towards me, it's like, well, at least they're all talking. You know, like,
yeah.
I'd more than happy to be the butt of every.
So you're the Dark Knight now. You've played nearly every role here in Batman so far tonight. Now you're the commissioner. You're not always the commissioner the league wants.
I would rather have
everyone. The commissioner the league needs.
Hate me as a fantasy football player than for the group chat to be silent throughout the week.
Oh gosh. He is the Dark Commissioner.
Heavy is the head that wears the crown.
Oh my gosh. It's the greatest fantasy football league in the world. And this is his podcast. He's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. Thanks for tuning in. Good night.